Hello and welcome to Kids of Stuff, a Chucky podcast, a Haunted MTL original podcast all about the Chucky franchise. I am one of your hosts, David Davis, and my life partner in crime and my co-host is Holly Han. Hello, Holly.
Hello, David.
So today we're talking about Chucky Season 2, Episode 2, titled The Sinners Are Much More Fun. So just some general notes before we dive in. I was sick this weekend, so I was not able to record, so this episode is a couple of days late. Sorry about that.
Sorry.
We do have a couple of corrections and tidbits from the last episode. So one thing that I didn't catch in the last episode, but I caught after I saw other people posting about it, was the "Is Tamara there?" is a reference to The Strangers. Now, I hadn't seen The Strangers in forever, so I missed that one. Now I want to rewatch it again to watch Glenn Howerton be creepy as hell.
See, I started watching Always Sunny after I had seen The Strangers. It had been a couple years, so I was like, holy shit, that's Dennis. Like, oh my gosh. Okay. So then from our Bride of Chucky episode, when we were talking about Bound and Dave mentioned Gina Gershon, I was totally thinking of Gina Davis when I was like, she's so tall. So I was thinking of like the juxtaposition of Tiffany and Gina Davis, not Gina Gershon. Also, Katherine Heigl used to be Mormon too. That explains a lot, not gonna lie.
Now, The Sinners Are Much More Fun was written by Don Mancini, but he is joined by Mallory Westfall this week.
This is her third episode of the show she has written, which includes last season's Just Let Go and Twice the Grieving, Double the Loss.
Now, Mallory Westfall is also one of the series' producers. She may also be recognizable to horror fans for a couple of other projects. Specifically, she produced and wrote episodes of Fear the Walking Dead's fifth season.
She also wrote several episodes of the horror anthology series Channel Zero.
Now, did you ever see Channel Zero?
I didn't.
Okay, the first season is based on a creepypasta called Candle Cove, and it is quite excellent.
Okay.
But it has Mark Brandanaquitz from Parks and Recreation.
See, I know him from Elizabethtown as the cousin. I love that.
So our director this week is Samir Rahim.
This is the third episode of Chucky he has directed, but he has at least four so far that as he's directed the third episode this season, Hail Mary.
He is a Canadian director who built up quite a list of projects over his career since directing music videos in the mid-1990s for the Matthew Good Band. And no, it is not the Matthew Good from Downton Abbey.
Aww.
Now, I'm not sure if this is the case for all Canadian directors, but I feel it is probably true. He did his time directing episodes of Degrassi.
I love Degrassi. Whatever it takes.
Specifically, he would direct 14 episodes of Degrassi, The Next Generation. That's the one with Mr. Worf, right?
Dude, that's the one where, what's-his-face shot Terry, the incel at the school. Oh, oh my God. And then Emma got pregnant and an Degrassi's amazing.
Degrassi. From 2009 to 2012, that's when he directed his 14 episodes. He would also direct episodes of Degrassi, The Next Class, in 2017. I would also be remiss if I failed to mention he directed several episodes of Kenny vs. Spenny, which I miss terribly, and Killjoys. I am 2 for 2 in Killjoys references in as many weeks.
This week also adds three actors that you wanted to discuss, but we'll discuss them as they appear in the episode.
Yep. So let's go ahead and get into the episode. So what we're going to do is use your notes to kind of guide us through the episode based on your reactions, and I'll throw in some stuff here and there. So you ready to do this?
Yeah.
Okay. So what's the message of the episode this week, Holly?
The sinners are much more fun.
So one of the first things we picked up is we're going to talk about the preview because we have, you know, the good guy voice saying, "Previously on fucking Chucky."
That was great.
So the voice actor here is Nick Fisher, who is a child actor who most recently appeared as a young Jeffrey Dahmer in Dahmer Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story.
Okay, so his parents are used to letting him do some messed up stuff. Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, it's cute. He's not the same voice actor as the original good guy doll voice, but, you know, he gets the tone just right.
He really does. So we're at the School of Incarnate Lord. So incarnate means embodied in human form. Parallels to the Ray family, Chucky, Tiffany, Glenn, and Glenda, because they're all embodied in the doll form.
Yeah, I do appreciate that quite a bit. You know, I do wonder what the Catholic Church's stance has been about this season. They're probably not enthusiastic about it.
No, there's probably been a press briefing. The Pope knows.
The Pope knows about Chucky. So we begin this episode with a reintroduction to Tiffany and Jennifer Tilly's body as played by Jennifer Tilly. Love it.
The Godfather opening with Tiff is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And ladies, you know, sometimes it really do be like that.
So I was trying to parse if this was a period joke or not.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
it is. Okay. I'm just a dumb boy. I get it. So I am interested that it is a Tiffany doll head in her bed, which makes me wonder how many times Tiff has split her soul.
It only seems like, well, there was the first doll and then in Bride of Chucky, and now there's the second doll. So at least twice.
Well, we know that the one Tiff got shot in the head in the truck. And I didn't necessarily see a gunshot wound to the head of that Tiff.
That's fair.
But then again, it could be a detail I missed. But also, this would be like a year later because of the truck scene was like a year in the past.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not exactly sure how many times Tiff has split her soul.
How many wedding bells did she get a hold of and put a makeover on?
Exactly.
But that really is a damn good looking breakfast.
You know, and it's fun to see Tiffany cook because it comes up a lot in the series, like during the RV ride during Bride of Chucky. I would love for them to do a video of Tiffany talking through her Swedish meatball recipe. I'm dying to know what about them won Charles Lee Ray over.
Oh my God. Okay, so imagine a video of Tiffany, but doing like Martha Stewart style, like cooking show.
Fuck Martha Stewart.
Right? Fuck Martha Stewart. But no, it's wonderful. And also, like, never cook while an RV is running. Like, if anyone has never told you that, you're not supposed to do that.
The myriad of things that are problematic with that whole moment in the movie, and you're like, they shouldn't be cooking with the RV running.
Yeah, well, I spent a lot of time around your parents in the RV, so, like...
That's fair.
They instilled a lot of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is this? The fucking Hotel Cortez? As Tiff is, like, walking down... The hallway, it gives a lot of American Horror Story vibes.
Mm-hmm. Down to her outfit and everything like that.
Right? She looked like Lady Gaga.
Now, I believe you stayed at the hotel that was the inspiration for the Hotel Cortez in American Horror Story, right?
Yes, it is the Hotel Cecil / the Stay on Main. The Hotel Cecil is, just a typical hotel, but the Stay on Main is more of a... It's more of a border situation or a hostel situation. It's very clean and neat and modern. I went with my friends when we were going to Labyrinth Ball in downtown LA. It was a cheap option. It was walkable. And we knew about the whole Elisa Lam thing in the water tower. For those of you who are not familiar, Elisa Lam made her way up to the roof and fell into the water tower and was not able to get out, unfortunately. Her body was in the drinking water for a few days before she was discovered.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the hotel is rumored to be haunted. Also, Richard Ramirez stayed there back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when you're talking about, like, what is this, the Hotel Cortez, you're specifically, like, looking at the aesthetic of Tiffany's house, which, like, that brings me to this point of, like, the aesthetics of the sets have always been on point on this show. I spoke a lot about color on the last season. For example, the way the hospital was colored just kind of blew my mind.
Oh, yeah.
The set design is fantastic, and it shot very well. So I figure we should mention Patricia Cuccia, who handles the set direction for the show.
It's beautiful.
Decoration for the show.
But it's amazing. It's beautiful. It's lush. It's just, chef's kiss.
Yeah, and then the school itself looks fantastic. We'll talk about the school a little bit more as we go on.
Okay.
But we get to an important point here in the episode.
Where Tiff is treating Nika like one of her dolls. And BT dubs, Nika is still in her home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Nika, as we recall at the end of last season, had her arms and legs cut off by Tiffany in a very, very strange move in the relationship.
It was a strange move, but it's also just like absolutely like body horror. It gives you chills in your spine.
Yeah, Nika's had a rough one. She deserves a win at some point. But it has been a year in captivity, which this solved my timeline confusion from the season premiere. And I am going to be kind of critical here. I think that they shouldn't have withheld the timeline information till the second episode. I would have preferred to have understood, like, it was a year or so in that first episode.
You don't like to be confused with timelines.
Yeah, it just seems like it was kind of just a messy thing that they could have just established, you know.
Oh, fair enough. Okay. We find out that we need blood for Chucky to come out of Nika.
Mm-hmm. And I love your note here on this one.
What, there's amazing lighting on Nika?
No, the one that anchors this part of the discussion that you're probably too embarrassed to mention.
Okay, well, needs blood to come out to play. Who doesn't? Winky emoji.
Oh, no, that's a smirk emoji.
That is
like confidence in that statement.
Yeah, well, I'm a weird girl.
Yeah, your emoji use is great in the notes. Like, nobody gets to see the emojis, but I get to, and they make me laugh.
Well, you know, just to affirm my tone.
So we do have that amazing, you mentioned the amazing lighting on Nika, especially when she wakes up. She looks kind of like a Disney princess.
She does. She also reminded me, it's not as intense, but the way that Morticia Adams is lighted on her eyes, it was like that, but softer.
Okay. So, you know, the fun color work here, especially when Nika is exposed to the blood, it's going to create an aesthetic that we're going to see all throughout the season. We'll see it later with the twist at the end of the episode, but just this kind of like blood candy red colors. Specifically, I want to mention that it evokes the work of Dario Argento. Any chance I get to mention giallo colors, I will take them.
Yeah, nerd. Mm. So Nika, Chucky, their laugh reminds me of a possessed Linda from The Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't place it for a while. I just had this weird doll image in my head that almost looked like the Annabelle doll that they use in the movies. And it took a little, like, reverse Google searching to figure out who I was thinking of. And then it hit me. It's the fucking Evil Dead girlfriend laugh. Oh, my God. And it was absolutely horrifying. It lives in my head rent-free.
Oh, and Fiona Dourif's, like, laugh is on point. So suppose Brad Dourif ever decides to retire from the character of Chucky. In that case, I am confident the series could continue easily with Fiona Dourif taking over the Charles Lee Ray and Chucky role. She is so good, especially when they use the prosthetics in her in season one's flashback sequences.
Dude, oh my God. We couldn't figure out for a while that was, I mean, until the credits, obviously, but we're just like, what the fuck is going on? Oh my God, it's Fiona.
Yeah, it's just absolutely fantastic. And I think like the series could go on for a long time, even if Brad Dourif wants to retire from the character. Now, that is our cold open to the episode. And we get to our opening titles.
And these are ornate framed pictures of Chucky.
Not just Chucky, but Nika too. It's a fun little hint of something that's coming in later in the episode.
Next, we get to hello, Daddy. Father. Devon Sawa's back. Everyone, meet Father Bryce.
So if they bring back Devon Sawa every season to kill him, I am 100% on board with that. I also appreciate how game he is with the silly little franchise and his rivalry with Chucky on social media.
I had no idea that was a thing.
Yeah, because I pulled up that video for us to watch, and it was just him, like, fighting with Chucky.
That's great.
Now, I just remembered that he had played the human version of Casper in the 1995 movie, which blew my fucking mind.
That was such, like, a childhood crush of mine. I had no idea. I thought maybe that actor just, like, disappeared, went into a private life, but no.
No, it was Devon Sawa. So what else do you remember him from?
I don't remember him from anything else.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you weren't as much of a 90s kid as I was simply because you were younger.
Yeah.
So for me, of course, we have Final Destination and we have Idle Hands. There's even an Idle Hands reference into the episode we're discussing. Maybe some of us might remember him from SLC Punk or SLC Punk 2. But here's where I'm going to blow your mind. Did you ever see the music video to Stan by Eminem?
Yeah, it was everywhere. Like, Dido was hot and she was in the video. Mm-hmm. And now all the youth are saying that we stan this or that. Like, it's a thing now.
I like how you said the youth. But he was the Stan in the music video.
No way.
Yes, he was the Stan. So if you want to see early 2000s Devon Sawa dressed like Slim Shady, watch that music video.
So he's always been a little, like, on the crazy side.
He always seems like he's been kind of, like, in on, like, you know, this is a weird career for anyone, so I'm going to embrace it and do the weird stuff. Because I also remember him from that movie he did with Jonathan Taylor Thomas and another teenage heartthrob actor where they were, like, shooting wildlife stuff in the woods.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a Warner Brothers mid-90s thing, but it's, you know, it's like, we're getting all the young, hot actors and put them in a movie where they're filming wildlife. You know, it's a very strange sort of career, but he's embracing the weirdness, it looks like.
You know, that's all we can really do in life is embrace the weirdness.
Mm-hmm. We also get introduced to a new character.
Nadine! I love her. She's so cute. She is definitely going to be the Velma to their Scooby gang. And who's Scooby? Chucky, of course.
Well, and it's interesting that you mentioned Chucky being part of the gang, because we'll get to that in a little bit. But Bella Higginbottom plays Nadine, and she's been active in the industry since about 2014. Now, I'm only familiar with her as one of the kids in the Mighty Ducks TV show that was on Disney Plus.
Oh!
I watched the first season, and then when they said Emilio Estevez wasn't coming back, I'm like, no, I'm not watching without Emilio Estevez. But so she was one of the Mighty Ducks in that new show.
Oh, okay. I think that's maybe where I recognize her from.
She wore the cape.
Oh, fuck. Okay, yeah. Nadine, I love aesthetically that she also kind of looks like Chucky.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's this pale, freckled girl with red curly hair. I know Chucky doesn't have curly hair, but she's like the human embodiment form of Chucky. So I wonder if, like, Chucky's going to take her over and be like, ooh, I could be a lady and still kind of look like, I don't know.
I don't know. We'll find out, because there's some interesting stuff going on with Nadine later.
That's true. So we've got a quote from Father Bryce: sex, drugs, and whatever. I love that.
And then, I love your note following this about.
Okay. So I'm going to reveal a lot of myself here. Father Bryce is definitely giving Zach Bagans vibes with those glasses.
You know, I'm glad I'm not the only one who got the Zach Bagans vibe from him. But I do want to point out in your notes that you wrote Bagans.
But that's the correct spelling of it.
I know, but he doesn't do that because he doesn't want to be associated with the Hobbits.
Yes.
But now I can't stop picturing, like, Ghost Adventures in Middle Earth with Zach trying to contact the dead men of Dunharrow.
So if anyone has watched Ghost Adventures from, like, 2008 on, you know, it used to be edgy and cool, and now it's just kind of a parody of itself, and they kind of embrace that. But Zach's last name is straight up Bagans. But to, like, give him this, I don't know, cool boy edge, he goes by Bagans. And, like, in the show, they've done a couple corrections where someone's called him Bagans.
And he goes Bagans. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. He does not want to be a hobbit.
Now, we also get another character introduction here.
Yes, Trevor, who we were warned about on the bus last time.
Mm-hmm.
He's an altar boy of all things, which is, like, super malicious and foreboding and ominous, because, like, if he was such a terror, why the fuck is he an altar boy?
Oh, and I have a theory about that we'll talk about, but specifically, he's a third actor I want to mention here. This is Jordan Cronus playing Trevor. I've only seen him credited for one episode so far, but he's obviously going to be back. Another reference to Canadian television, he was also in an episode of Murdoch Mysteries.
I love Murdoch Mysteries.
And we're going to find, like, two or three other actors in this episode who have also been on Murdoch Mysteries.
Hot damn.
Yeah.
Yeah. If any of you love murder mysteries and historical costume dramas, check out Murdoch Mysteries. It's been on for, like, 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the actors have not aged.
Well, it's been on since, like, the early 2000s.
No, I know, but, like...
like, 50 years.
Yeah. And their social media director, whoever is, like, writing the Facebook post for Murdoch Mysteries, is on point. Because, like, they update literally every week with new pictures and updates on the series. It's great. Good for them.
So now we move into this idea of, like, they're kind of getting used to this new life here at this school. And one of the first rules, which you freaked out about.
No phones. Just fucking kill me now. God damn.
And then we start getting some interaction between Sister Elizabeth and the kids, starting with Lexi.
Yeah, she introduces their wardrobes to them. And Sister Elizabeth immediately starts to body shame Lexi. She's made to wear clothes that are too big. Lexi is a size 0. And she's given size 2 clothing, which means that it's an inch bigger, I think, than, like, there's more of a fabric width there. I think it's a 2-inch thing. I don't know. but she needs her hair brushed. And okay, that's maybe valid. I get it, because she's got the messy, sexy girl vibe going on. But she's told to wear no makeup. Like, more on this later, but Sister Elizabeth is like, you look like Madonna and not the good one. What the fuck? The fuck does that mean? Like, this kid literally just got here and you're going to make them be shameful of their bodies, which I get is a total Catholic guilt thing that Don Mancini's writing into it, but it was just so fucked.
Well, isn't the Madonna also the one of the names for the Mother of Christ?
Yeah, that's supposed to be the good one.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, hey, that's okay. Sister Elizabeth gets her comeuppance at the end of the episode.
Thank God.
Devin's told he's underweight, and he takes that as a compliment.
And we see, like, Devin kind of being sassy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the hashtag gay sass. I love it. It's just like, oh, thank you.
Well, I do appreciate the unflappability of Devin Evans, which I love saying his name.
It's like David Davis or Holly Hamm.
Devin Evans. I don't think the situation is quite sunken in for him yet as to what this environment is supposed to be like. I get the sense that he came from a very secular household.
Which would make sense because his mom was a cop and mm-hmm. he was a true crime podcaster. So I feel like they revered science and facts in their home more than they did religion.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting, especially, you know, given what's going to happen with Jake this season. So not so much with Jake. Jake is really taking all of this to heart. He seems to have quite a bit of insight to the Catholic faith.
Yeah.
Or at least organized religion here, which we'll get into is Jake has a few brushes with religious thought here that are really interesting.
Yeah. And then so Father Bryce walks in, as does Sister Ruth, and she immediately compliments Father Bryce's morning homily. And it just feels like she's how can I say this? She's sucking his dick. She's got to be.
Wow. Okay, so that's definitely a theory. Specifically, like, when Father Bryce comes in, he asks, do you know why you're here? And Jake he repeats what Sister Ruth said at the end of the last episode. But there's, like, a level of guilt to it.
Yeah, and then Sister Ruth chimes in, like, I told him that. And she seems like, I say this with trepidation, but she says it like a pick me. But that phrase does carry a lot of loaded misogyny, which I don't mean to imply here. But maybe, you know, she's teacher's pet.
Yeah, I just think the idea of nun rivalry is being fucking hilarious because, again, it's like crabs in a bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot for the nuns to do, I'm assuming. So just like sniping and picking at each other that way seems really funny.
Yeah. And then there's the animosity between Elizabeth and Ruth when Ruth mentions her toy drive.
Yeah, and it goes in line with these like very funny moments that say a lot about the power dynamics in the school and how those are great sources for problems down the line for the writers to tap into. I'm a big fan of that sort of thing because inevitably the like petty shit gets pulled into the central situation and just makes everything a whole lot worse. Basically, the more suffering Dawn and the writers want to inflict on these kids, the happier I am.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really glad we don't have kids.
Well, if they were my kids, it'd be different. But no, like, if you're writing a TV show, you want the kids to deal with crap, right?
Oh, yeah. So
The more angles that it comes at them from, the more entertaining it is for me.
You know who was in the box, David?
It was Tiffany.
It was Chucky.
Oh, no. It was Chucky. Oh, no.
Chucky was in the box. Or at least there was a good guy doll in the box.
I will file this under not necessarily a surprise, but I am pleased by how immediately this shit goes down. Also, it's one of those fun moments where we get this delayed reintroduction of Chucky to the kids that ends with a hilarious payoff because they leave the room. Then the toy gets brought over, unwrapped. We see it's Chucky, and it's like, oh, that, like, ship's passing in the night.
Right? Yeah, it's just, there was this, oh, fuck moment. Like, this like, dread, like, oh, fuck, what are they getting into?
Mm-hmm.
And, so when they unwrap it, I do love this. Ruth sees Jesus in the face of Chucky. And Elizabeth notes, Ruth said that she saw Jesus in the taco last week. And it's just more evidence of Ruth trying to be special, or she's got a big old crush on Father Bryce. And that plays into David's sex nun theory, although I'm on board completely.
Well, I'm not sure how I feel about it being called my sex nun theory, but I do think Sister Ruth is certainly hiding a little sin in her saintliness.
Oh, yeah.
This also sparks my big theory for this season, but we'll cover that in a little bit.
We do get a cool nun alert.
Yes.
Sister Catherine.
I'm going to feel so bad when Sister Catherine dies.
Dude, right?
So Sister Catherine is played by Andrea Carter. She's the third person this episode who has showed up on Murdoch Mysteries.
Yes!
She was also in a couple of episodes of the great Sci-Fi Channel adaptation of 12 Monkeys.
Which you fucking loved.
I love 12 Monkeys.
It was a little too dark for me. a little too real there.
Yeah, so Sister Catherine is introduced here, but then we get the roommate assignments.
Yeah, Lexi and Nadine are roommates. It's kind of telling that Nadine has been alone this whole time.
Yeah, I've never been so happy to have like a pair of characters matched up like this. Like just the vibe of Lexi and Nadine, I'm really looking forward to that.
Hopefully Nadine humbles her down a little bit.
Mm.
But we find out Nadine has bladder control issues, and I feel like this could be a warning sign. David actually had a different theory.
Well, yeah, you said it was a warning sign of potential SA, which we'll just call it that. Like, if you understand the sort of thing, SA. You're not sure if the show wants to get that dark. I'm unsure if the show wants to go bad priest touchy-touchy as an angle here when there's enough trauma regarding the specter of conversion therapy looming over the two queer leads. But I think it is something to put a pin in.
Yeah. I also just immediately thought maybe Nadine has some potential to be a serial killer, because that's usually one of the first warning signs.
Right. Not that occasional bedwetting is a de facto sign of mental illness that leads to serial killing.
We're not trying to say that, right. But in a show that deals with killers and us being true crime fanatics,
mm-hmm.
we understand that bedwetting into later adolescence, early adulthood, usually is a sign that maybe they're also killing small animals.
Well, okay, keep going, because I'm gonna say some stuff on here.
Oh,
get through your
gosh.
Next point.
Okay. So, I don't know, man. She might have some psychopathic tendencies, maybe. And then, along with wetting the bed, we find out she's also a klepto. And while I don't know if she's setting fires, kleptomania is definitely one of the antisocial behaviors that you need to keep an eye on. Warning signs for serial killers when they display in their youth.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is one of those things that we've heard of referred to as like the soup in a serial killer's development.
Yeah.
There are several behaviors that do not mean that someone is a potential serial killer, but have been seen in recorded histories of serial killers.
Yeah.
So when you think about figures like Dahmer, Ramirez, Gacy, Berkowitz, Fish, and Gein, there's these commonalities, like kleptomania is seen in many of them, that sort of thing.
Killing small animals. Bedwetting. A lot of like delinquent activity in their youth. They mm-hmm. just, you know, it's a commonality, not necessarily a causality.
Exactly. With that said, one of the big ones seen in the lives of serial killers is head trauma, usually at a developmental stage, often in childhood. So I'd be curious to see if that happens down the line with Nadine or is referenced in her past, because if head trauma becomes a thing associated with her character, then yeah, theoretically, they could be going for the angle that she may also have sociopathic tendencies.
Ooh. And Lexi's trapped in a room with her.
Mm-hmm.
So I love this. Jake and Devin get a room together. And Devin is stoked. Jake just wants to keep things quiet because, you know, Catholics hate the gays.
Well, not all Catholics. I'm sure there are a few Christ homies out there down with the gays.
But, like, LOL at fucking Father Bryce warning them of the dangers of the opposite sex. Like, honey, you are woefully unaware.
Now, that is something that bothers me a little bit, because that brings up a point. Wouldn't their relationship status be factored in here? Surely Dr. Mixter would have been aware, right?
Maybe. Or maybe that was something that they, like, kept back from her.
Well, even then, the police report might have indicated that Jake and Devin were in a relationship. I feel like Jake's adoptive parents would have brought it up, especially as Gary died when Jake ran off to see Devin.
Oh,
that seems like a pretty important factor in all of this.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Okay.
So I know that this is probably the part of the larger camp of the series, but I'm not sure how Father Bryce wasn't already aware of the circumstances coming in.
Especially with, there's a later line mm-hmm. that he says that it kind of seems strange that he is unaware of that.
Yeah. It may be a forced setup for him to learn later and go down the conversion therapy angle. It just feels a little off to me that they were roomed together, especially when they're also implicated in an accidental death.
Yeah.
Like, okay, all three of them going to the same school. Okay, I get that.
Yeah.
But rooming two of them together after they have been implicated in the death of a child.
Yeah.
Real questions there.
Yeah. Like, even actual prison systems try and avoid stuff like that.
Yeah, you separate people who have committed a crime together.
Yeah.
So, I you know, I'm not sure. But we do get back to new besties, Lexi and Nadine.
I love that. So, Lexi has got some low self-esteem. She's probably depressed, definitely anxious, and on edge. And while taking off her makeup, she doesn't think she's pretty, which is really... I mean, it's at the heart of every teenage girl, not going to lie. It's probably at the heart of, honestly, everyone. We all deal with insecurity issues. Mm-hmm. But just to see it, like, this obviously very beautiful girl is telling herself and her new roommate that she doesn't think she's pretty without makeup on. Like, that really, that sucks. And it really had to be hard for Olivia during this because obviously you have, like, nude style makeup for being on camera when you're being shown without makeup because the light has to reflect and all of that jazz. You can't just be barefaced, otherwise it's going to look terrible. But that had to be a huge thing for Olivia to be like confident as Lexi or get back into this Lexi role without that armor of makeup, which I mean, a lot of teenage girls use it as a defense, as an armor that we put on for the world. Not that I'm a teenage girl, but when I was, you know, black eyeliner all day, every day.
Well, and it's also stripping her of her status as a bully. You know, since the beginning of the show, we've seen her as a bully, especially in her social circle of Hackensack. Still, now she's broken down and being just another kid. And there is potential for her to relive what was apparently traumatic bullying in her past. So it's going to be big for her character to go through this.
And then Nadine reveals that her parents couldn't control her, and she agrees with Lexi that moms are the worst.
Now, there's a lot of setup between these two, which I'm eager to see play out. This is a great pairing of characters.
It is. And Nadine desperately wants to swap secrets with Lexi. She wants to have that connection. And Lexi is, like, not having it. She's like, whatever.
Yeah, her defenses have not been broken yet.
Yet. So I noticed Lexi only has 5 anxiety pills, or at least that's what pours into her hand. And girl, that's enough to last a work week. Like, what you doing?
You know, and I'm wondering, like, how Lexi is going to get her fix going forward. It's too early for her to have to go through withdrawal.
Yeah.
Like, narratively. So I'm thinking perhaps maybe if Sister Ruth isn't a sex nun, Sister Ruth maybe has uppers.
She's a drug nun.
She might be a drug nun. We'll see. We'll see.
I do love this. We go back to Jake and Devin's room. Now take off those clothes, says Father Bryce.
Now, Father Bryce leaves the room, and Jake breaks down from guilt over Gary's death. If there's one thing Catholicism seems to embrace is guilt. We see later Jake appears to have some knowledge of Catholic theory and tradition, so I'm wondering if maybe his mother was particularly faithful.
That would explain a lot of the... Well, it would add context to the fallout that Jake and his dad had when, you know, his mom died. They had a very strange relationship, and it wasn't just the gay thing.
Now, we get to a scene where Trevor is then introduced again.
Yep. He is a knockoff Draco Malfoy. I love it. With one ball.
With one ball. It was very clear. You know, As much as Lexi has grown, she has not grown because immediately she goes in there and postures and, like, mentions his one testicle.
Right.
But, you know, you also mentioned that Trevor's friends are kind of weird. They have super culty vibes.
Yeah, just the way they repeat things in that monotone voice.
So,
I think
they're kind of like Crabbe and Goyle.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit like Crabbe and Goyle. I definitely think the background characters, like these kids, are supposed to be, like, very brainwashed and very... following the rules, so either they don't get in trouble or so just they make it out alive.
Well, it is a religious school, so
yeah, you just got to make it out alive, dude.
Well, and it also, Trevor is the Shelton of this Child's Play 3 parallel. He has that insidious quality to work within a system to inflict cruelty upon others, like a politician.
Yep.
You know, and that was how Shelton worked in Child's Play 3. He was the head boy in charge of, you know, Andy's class.
So now we're in art class. We see Sister Catherine, and she is teaching them about the seven deadly sins and the four last things.
Now,
you lost your shit here.
Yes. So I don't really have a comment to add to the interpretation of it beyond the fact that I fucking love Hieronymus Bosch. Well, okay, I'm going to put my art history cap on here. There is some debate as to whether it is attributed to him alone. It is likely painted partially by one or more of his assistants. This is a common misconception of classic artists that they did these works alone. They often had students and assistants who would work under them and do fill-in work, specific tasks that they specialized in. It is a very hotly contested element of Renaissance art theory. There's a lot of debate around it. If you want to learn more about this sort of thing, there is an essay by Christopher May titled "The Artist's Assistant: An Absent Presence in Art History," available at academia.edu. Okay, hat off.
Oh my gosh, David. Yes, I got that lecture too, a little more in depth. So this nun is definitely cool, and too bad the show is probably going to kill her.
You know, and I feel awful about that, but it feels like she has a big stab me sign taped to the back of her habit.
Right? She's too nice.
But this scene is also pretty important developmentally for Jake.
He goes super emo with Catholic guilt.
Now, Jake is going to be tempted by the comfort of religion this season, I'm pretty sure. I'm not going to say that is a bad thing necessarily. Religion helps a lot of people. But the big selling point for Catholicism is the absolution of sin. Though for a long time, you could literally buy it, but thanks to Martin Luther, you now have to at least work at absolving yourself of sin just a little bit.
Just a little bit. And then back in the father's office, Chucky does his falling trick for Sister Elizabeth. And you giggled so hard.
Yeah, just all those little things where, like, the doll, like, eats shit, gets hit against something or dropped, that just makes me happy because you just know it's Charles Lee Ray just like, I can't believe I'm fucking doing this again.
Right? And then we get that this is, in fact, a Chucky doll and not just some random good guy doll. And does it look like an older model to you in the face?
So I think this is an off-the-shelf replica. However, the hair looks slightly different from the models I've seen. I'm pretty sure that they use those replicas for the shots with the boxes of Chucky dolls.
Oh.
Especially in the truck in the season premiere.
Okay. He just looked a little different, and I thought maybe this was like an older model from Tiffany's collection.
It is. It is definitely a meant to evoke the screen model of Child's Play 1 and 2.
For nice. Sure. Okay. So then Sister Elizabeth has a goddamn heart attack. And Chucky's reaction is fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, I scared you so much. You made my day. Thank you. It's just, oh, he's just so delighted that she has a fucking heart attack.
Yeah. So, of course, Sister Elizabeth has passed away.
Do we need another 7 days to mourn an Elizabeth?
I thought you hated her for body shaming Lexi.
I do, but, you know, Elizabeths have been dying recently, and we've been going into a week of mourning, so.
Exactly.
But
can't show any comedy videos in the UK right now.
No, you can't. They'll get mad.
So, in all seriousness, this is more evidence for this season as being a remix of Child's Play 3, because this is precisely how Colonel Cochran died in that movie.
Aww.
Chucky scares him, and the guy has a heart attack. He takes it less well in that first movie. But here he's like, oh, no, this is a treat. This is wonderful.
So this happens and it's really disturbing. Chucky takes a picture of Sister Elizabeth while she's dead. And that has me question, is Chucky into snuff?
Well, the photo seems like a silly, oh, that Chucky sort of thing. But this is a significant plot point going forward.
And why are the children all there as the body is being carted off? This isn't Hogwarts.
Although Murder Hogwarts sounds like a fun vibe.
That's just Hogwarts. And then Chucky flicks off the gang from the desk. Did I say flick?
Yeah, flick.
Oh my gosh. Flips off the gang from the desk. He's like, neener, neener, neener.
Yeah, every time that stubby little middle finger shows up, I am absolutely delighted. I just appreciate the audacity of it because there are other people around, you know, Jake, Devin, and Lexi.
Yeah, if any other kid, like, turned their head into the office, they would have seen it too.
And Chucky's just like, haha, fuck you.
Right? So we have no time to grieve. And this really threw me off. Sister Ruth seems pleased or at least unfazed.
Sister Ruth is trying to show leadership in a time of crisis, Holly. Jeez.
She seemed pretty fucking happy about it.
I wouldn't say she seemed happy, but she did seem, like, definitely unfazed. Like, this is like, okay, this is the new normal, I'm gonna roll with it.
That is unsettling.
Yeah, no, it is a totally, like, fucked up thing. Like, the way that everything just, like, we're gonna continue on our day, never mind that this nun who many of you have known for probably a couple of years now is dead.
Yeah, it's fucked.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jake tries to blame himself, but if it wasn't him, it would have been someone else.
Again, Jake feels guilt for things out of his control, which does not make me feel seen at all. Nope. I get where he's coming from, though, but it is unhealthy, and I think his desperation for some way to assuage his guilt will put him closer to Father Bryce, and we're going to get a lot of delicious drama between Jake and Devin regarding that.
Yeah. And I love this line. He reminds me of my dad.
So I always have this constant image of Don Mancini at a kitchen table typing away and chuckling at himself when we get little moments like this. This just seems like a Don Mancini chuckler.
Like, I'm smart.
It's a great little reference, you know, and then we also had the Idle Hands reference, I think, that came up later in the episode. But it's a lot of fun little bits here.
Yeah. Now, this episode does jump around a lot from who we're dealing with. So now we're going back to Tiffany playing Jennifer Tilly while watching Liar Liar on TV. And we find out that, well, we're confirmed that Tiffany cannot act.
Yeah, the angle of Tiffany being a terrible actress is something they started in season one with that press conference.
That's right.
But holy shit, it is so funny to see in this episode.
She's just trying to mime, and it's not working, and oh god, it's embarrassing. And then Nika references Tiffany blowing through all of the Simpsons money. I had no idea about this, but you went down a Google hole.
Yeah, because I remembered that she had been married to Sam Simon for a while. Sam Simon being one of the co-creators of The Simpsons, but when he passed away, she gets a portion, I think like 30% of all money that goes to his estate from The Simpsons.
That's still a lot of money.
Yeah, no, that is a ton of money. So it's just hilarious how this franchise can play with like real life elements and work them into the show's canon. Though, that makes me wonder, is Don going to retcon the death of Britney Spears and Seed of Chucky, given the circumstances we know now behind her conservatorship?
That is going to be an interesting conversation when we do Seed of Chucky.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering about that.
It's been a while since I've seen that movie, so I honestly cannot recall that. I forgot Britney was in that movie completely.
It wasn't actually her. It was someone playing Britney.
Oh.
But no, just like it's like she's got a license plate that says Britney and her car goes over a cliff and everything like that. But it was very like mid-2000s snarky.
When everyone was piling on Britney.
Yeah, and then now that we know the circumstances behind her conservatorship, it's like, So I do wonder if Dawn is going to retcon that.
She survived.
Yeah, probably. came back stronger than yesterday.
Nothing's going to get in her way.
Exactly.
Her loneliness ain't killing her no more.
Again, like the idea of integrating real life stuff into the continuity, I absolutely adore. But that's one area that's kind of like sticking out to me now.
Yeah. And we find out that Glenn and Glenda's birthday is this weekend, which means that if they were born in 1998, they're turning 24.
Good for them.
They can rent a car legally in California now.
Well, and you know, I was really excited. I think you and I both made very excited noises when they were mentioned in the episode, because we knew Glenn and Glenda were coming.
Yeah, we knew.
We absolutely knew. But to hear it like actually being said in the episode.
Yes.
And like, you know, we have somewhat of a timeline here. Yeah, that made me really excited to hear that.
It was nice. So then Tiffany ball gags Nika in another room. And it's so cute. The ball gag is cute, not the kidnapping.
It is a very cute ball gag, one that you could buy from like a Spencer's Gifts.
Or adamandeve.com.
Okay, there you go. So we get this moment where like there's a alert, and then it seems like a weird fan has climbed the wall of Tiffany's property, or so Tiff thinks.
We get introduced to Sam Gavin. I'm sorry, Detective Sam Gavin.
Yes, Sam Gavin, I'm sorry, Detective Sam Gavin, is played by Sergio DiZio. His name references Detective Sam Loomis from Psycho, or maybe Dr. Loomis from Halloween, but I am leaning towards Psycho because John Gavin played the character in Psycho.
Oh.
Plus, as a writer, when coming up with names, that is something I would totally do as well.
Yeah, because you're a bitch boy writer.
Okay, fair enough. So then, why is Detective Sam Gavin at the property?
Because he's looking for missing person Nika Pierce. Finally, some fucking accountability.
And we get this really fun exchange between Tiffany and Detective Sam Gavin. Every time he's about to ask a question.
No.
Yeah.
No. Tiff
just keeps cutting him off.
No.
And then, of course.
No. I'm sorry.
And of course, Jennifer Tilly mentions her charitable causes.
Women with mental health issues. I'm sorry, maybe that was more Jennifer Coolidge.
But the delivery of that line, like, killed you. I saw you laughing really hard when she said that.
I think I snorted even. Like, it just tickled me in my soul.
But it's just further reaffirming that Tiffany. Again, because it's Tiffany playing Jennifer Tilly. Oh, gosh, it's confusing.
It's confusing.
Yeah. So Tiffany is definitely not an actress, but I do appreciate that no matter how suspicious Tiff is as Jennifer Tilly, people are still starstruck by her.
Right?
Like, hilariously so.
I mean, she is in that dress and them titties.
Well, when she made the joke, the twins are coming, I'm like, oh, yeah, I see the twins right there. No, yeah,
we see them. They're out and about.
So we're back at the school again. The episode is jumping around between these two plot lines, basically. So we're back at the school and Jake is now on a mission.
He only gets 5 minutes for the restroom. Ew.
And then as he's on his little restroom trip, he goes into the dining hall and finds that all dining items are plastic. So instead of just saying screw it, he ends up picking up a plastic knife anyway, because apparently a plastic knife is gonna do something.
I mean, you have to have something better than nothing.
There's probably some sort of like Jesus statue or something that he could have clubbed Chucky to death with.
He could have dipped the knife into holy water and then it would have been like an anointed spear of God.
So Jake and Father Bryce now have this really interesting moment that comes up here.
Is different lesson now. It's mm-hmm. creepy and kind of seductive, and it's, oh god, it's weird.
See, so I don't know if it's your lust for Devon Sawa coloring that way, but I didn't necessarily see it as seductive, but there is a predatory edge to it, and I don't mean predatory in like a bad touch way. But rather that, like, Father Bryce has a desire to exert authority here. Like, there's a soul to save.
Yeah. But also, like, I don't know. I feel like Father Bryce is a fuckboy. I'll get to it later. There's a scene. But it's just, there's this sensuality to the tone of voice that he's using. And I feel like he's using his known sex appeal to bring people to God.
I mean,
that's what...
All you faithful.
That's what the ladies missionaries do at downtown Temple Square. They put all the hot ones down by the famous temple. I'm not even kidding. That's what they do.
Mormon things. All right. So we get like this really interesting scene here where Jake gets his first Bible. And I like that you put Jake's first Bible, LOL.
LOL. Yeah.
You heathen.
Oh, yeah. Total heathen.
So the Bible thing coded another way could have been kind of sweet, but given the show's tone and how this conversation plays out, it's an invasive obligation because isn't it like specifically Father Bryce's father's Bible or something, or the Bible that he got from his father?
I'm not sure if
he mentioned something like that.
Yeah.
It may just be that like he's setting this expectation of like father to son, which it's kind of invasive and it's kind of an obligation.
Yeah.
You're putting a lot more weight on it than... You probably should.
It also might have just been a reference that Devon Sawa played his father in the series.
Could also be that too, yes.
But it's also like popping a cherry. Like, I know that sounds weird, but he's giving him his first Bible. I mean, as far as he knows, so he's popping his cherry to God.
Wow.
Wow. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
So it's just, right, it's just weird. And it that's his only textbook. And that I find very disturbing, considering in this household, we hold academia very high. Like, it's an important thing. And his only textbook is a fucking Bible. It's very worrisome. But Father Bryce leaves Jake locked in the room with Chucky, and we get more exposure therapy. I don't like it. Jake punches Chucky across the room, unprovoked, and that was wonderful.
Now, I think Chucky being a murderous little shit is provocation enough.
That's fair.
But any chance to just throw that doll around the set is worth taking.
Yeah, that's fair. And this little shit takes pictures of Jake and runs up the chimney like a fucking goblin.
And then why does Chucky need pictures of the kids? Is this a recon mission?
But also, like, don't take pictures of other people's kids. That's weird.
Oh, I think, a serial murderer, him taking photos of kids is probably the least of our concerns.
No, I know. But, like, in general, just don't take pictures of other people's kids.
Life pro tip. Don't go to a park and start taking photos of things because Pokemon Snap tells you to. Or Pokemon Go.
Oh, no.
Yeah, every time Pokemon Go has this little update, it's like, hey, go to this park and take photos. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that.
You have a beard. You can't do that.
I'm not allowed to be within 5 feet of children because I have a beard. So there you go.
No.
So if this Chucky is scouting, that seems to be the most likely theory. We know that the Chucky seem to be having memory issues. So this Chucky could be creating a hit list. But, he's also having fun with it.
That's fair.
Like, he giggled as he went up the fireplace.
He did. That was so weird. And Father Bryce is super pissed that Chucky is missing when he comes back in.
Again, camp, I know. But people in power creating circumstances where something unusual happens with the doll and don't consider that the circumstances they've created have made them so fucking unusual.
Thank you. God damn. Okay, and then we find out that the rooms lock from the outside. Ugh. And yeah, I put 3 red flag emojis. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's like nighttime. Lexi's trying to figure out a way to kind of lock because she knows Chucky's there.
Yep.
So yeah, the room's only locked from the outside. And like on one hand, if these are troubled children, I can kind of understand it, but also no, don't do this.
It's very archaic.
Yeah, it's very archaic. Like if, yeah.
No. Yeah. Gives me bad vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Lexi barricades the door like Jack Torrance is on the other fucking side. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nadine admits her secret is kleptomania and that all the good stuff is under the bed.
And anyone can see that this is setting something up.
Lexi waits until Nadine is asleep and crushes her pills to snort. It looks like all 5. Girl, what you doing?
And then we see under the bed.
This little fucker's gonna get her.
Yep, Chucky shows up. Only this time, surprise, it's another photo. Also, I like that she didn't notice the camera's flash in the darkened room.
Right. Well, she was too absorbed nasally.
And then we get this really fun little bit where, Lexi sees Chucky. She screams. Chucky screams. Nadine wakes up to the screaming and then starts screaming herself. And you get this triple screamer.
I'm going to name some kind of adult move that and call it the triple screamer.
Okay, so this bit where all of them are screaming, hilarious. It's also kind of weirdly in and out of character for Chucky to react like that, making me wonder if this one is a little different from the others.
He was very reactionary, and usually Chucky's not reactionary like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a vulnerability.
Plus, it now brings Nadine into the circle of people who know about Chucky, which should be fascinating.
And she's not dead yet.
That's true.
So everyone is awake now. And why is the whole goddamn school in their doorway? What is this? Hogwarts?
Murder Hogwarts is real.
Yes, it is.
So I also like that you note that it reminds you of Downton Abbey when something happens inside the house where like the entire family and the downstairs staff come up to one of the bedrooms.
It's just like a whole cast shot. Like, what? Why is Lady Grantham crying?
Mm-hmm. We also get that fun comedy where Lexi is signaling Jake and Devin. I miss bathroom.
Bathroom.
Again, adults are useless because Jake and Devin slip into the bathroom and we see Chucky hiding in the towel trolley.
Towel trolleys seem like a lot of fun. I just want to jump into one. Like, I might break it, not gonna lie. But, like, I just want to, like, cannonball into one with, like, soft, fluffy towels.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So, this, of course, leads to the moment that will live in legend. Devin punts the ever-loving shit out of Chucky.
There's so many dumb internet debates involving or revolving around whether you can beat Chucky just by kicking the little shit away. I like that this is like a nod to that whole thing. Like, yeah. Obviously, it's going to create some distance, but he does have the strength of a full-grown man.
He does. I wonder if he also has, like, the kinetic energy of a full-grown man.
Does he operate on Ant-Man rules? That's a good question.
Ooh!
So Jake starts going through the phone that Chucky drops during this whole thing, and he seems to put something together. And we get this idea that, yeah, Chucky is probably scouting for something.
But who is he scouting for?
That, like, is the $64,000 question.
Like, is there a lead Chucky? Is it a Tiffany? Is he working with Andy? I don't think he would be working with Andy, but, like, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, so later the kids go into the storage room. I couldn't tell, like, every room in that house is dark and everything like that.
It's dark and full of terrors.
Were they keeping the tied up Chucky in their room, or were they keeping Chucky in a storage room?
It seemed like a storage room.
Okay. So later the kids go into the storage room and reveal the bound and gagged Chucky, which is an interesting parallel with Nika, as we see earlier in the episode and in the next scene.
Yep. So we're back at Tiffany's domestic scene back in Hackensack. She's preparing for the arrival of Glenn and Glenda. Someone arrives at the door, and an excited Tiffany goes and gags Nika again. And again, the presence of the gag is thematically important here.
Right, so we get this fun scene where Nika seems to have a dissociative state, and we discover the shocking reveal that Nika and the Chucky that's inside her body, inside her head, they're communicating and working together.
And we get the flashing red light that you love.
Mm-hmm.
Every time an Argento reference comes up, you get a little boner.
Yeah, so thank you. again, we get this triggered lighting with, like, the candy red color. You know, when we first see her go into this state, we see she has the gag. When she's fully in the state and talking to Chucky, the gag's not there. So obviously we're inside her head at the moment. It's very well done.
It was.
Mm-hmm.
I think I even saw a little drool with the gag, and that was kind of hot. Not gonna lie.
Okay. All right. So as this is going on, we have the return of Detective Sam Gavin, who knows Nika is on the property. And we watch Tiffany fumble her way into letting him into the house.
She kills him in the most stylish way possible, slicing his throat with her nail file in that dress.
Which, if I am counting correctly, is the fifth time she's killed this way in the franchise using her nail file. That's become her signature.
And I remember firmly saying, she's not dumb enough to kill a cop. Oh, fuck.
And she killed the cop.
God damn, it was quick, too.
Mm-hmm. So we get one more scene. This is a big one. A huge teaser. So we see a pink Mini Cooper with they/them plate approach the property to the tune of the Slitz's Heard It Through the Grapevine.
So good.
Mm-hmm. Glenn and Glenda appear in the series again for the first time since 2004. We do not get to see that much of Lachlan Watson yet, but with an entrance like that, we can expect some important moments ahead. And we're going to talk a lot more about Lachlan Watson next week after we see them fully in the next episode.
I'm so excited. The fashions were on point. Mm-hmm. There were purple furs, electric green furs. We've got leather. We've got platforms. We've got nails. I am fucking here for it.
It is a great vibe going forward. So that kind of gets us to the end of the episode. So we have a couple things we want to do here real quick. You have this whole series of questions, like, mid-scene in your notes for the bathroom scene.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you were just suddenly taken by divine inspiration.
I was.
So the questions that I have that you wrote down are, does Chucky go to the bathroom? Below that, is his meat alive? Does it smell? So I'm going to posit that if he can spit and come, as he has done canonically twice in the franchise so far, his body is living.
Well, just, like, you know, there's been dead Chuckies around. We've talked about this before. Like, what about all these meat-filled dolls? And if the meat was living and is now dead, that would conclude that there is rot. And if anyone's ever smelled rotten meat, it fucking reeks. Mm-hmm. I can only imagine how a dead body smells. So, like, why aren't they putting this together, David?
Yeah, you know, again, we've seen the doll come twice.
We have.
So he is a living thing.
And he's made babies.
Yes. So as for our kill count in this episode, we have two deaths. One for Chucky and then one for Tiff, unless we count the severed head of Tiffany in the bed, but I'm inclined not to because it happens off screen.
Oh, was that, do you think, with that said, we didn't talk about this, who put the head in Tiffany's bed?
That's a good question. Could it be a Chucky?
It could have been a Chucky. Maybe it was Andy who snuck in, or maybe it was Mika somehow with working together with Chucky, and I don't know how they would do that with their amputation and their nubs, but I'm sorry, that wasn't appropriate. But how did that head get there?
That's a good question. I feel like maybe we might be getting into factions of Chucky's.
You might have
Tiff loyalists, and you may have Chucky's who are out for revenge.
It was a great unprecedented time in this civil war of our horror franchise.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. So that does lead us to what I'm calling a segment called Wild Mass Guessing. I'm going to ask you, Holly, for your guess as to what's coming up this season based on what you've seen so far.
So I think Father Bryce might be a fuckboy. I know I said earlier we would get to the scene. I forgot to mention it. I'm sorry. When the entire school comes to the doorway, Father Bryce is wearing this like red silky robe. Red, the color of passion and sex and lust. Love. Yeah, exactly. It just seemed very opulent for a father of a school for wayward children to be wearing. It just, I don't know. He's a fuckboy. He's got to be. Or he has an OnlyFans. Maybe it's not Sister Susan, but maybe it's Father Bryce who has the OnlyFans. But still, Silky's pajamas are sus. Regarding Glenn and Glenda, maybe one is the killer and the other isn't.
Well, we do kind of get the sense that they're of different temperaments by the end of Seed of Chucky.
Yeah.
Again, we haven't seen them since 2004, so who knows what's changed?
Yeah, but I would love to see, like, they're twins, you know, they do a lot of things in tandem with each other, but one is a psychopath and the other is trying to maybe lead them back to the good side of things.
Which is entirely possible.
Andy and Kyle are definitely alive.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
And then you had a theory about... I'm sorry, I said Susan earlier. I meant Sister Ruth.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sister Susan. So my big theory is that Sister Ruth will attempt an exorcism on a Chucky doll. We finally had some access to the special features at Air Post show on Sci-Fi, and something Don Mancini said struck me as he named a couple of exorcism films as influence to the religious horror theme of this season. Again, this is just me wild mass guessing this shit, but between her seeing the face of Jesus in a taco... and the Chucky doll.
Right.
I feel like she's going to try to do an exorcism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to go well for her.
No. No, she's going to get stabbed in the face for sure. Also, if anyone has access to Sci-Fi's behind the scenes on this, you get to see Don Mancini talking about all of this. And I had no idea he looked that hot. I was picturing like Dom DeLuise in my head. I don't know why.
Which I do not understand why.
I don't either. And I don't know why, like, I didn't look up his picture before. Be like, because I like to put a face to the name. That's mm-hmm. how I recognize people is from different movies and whatnot, not necessarily by their names. So I just had this immediate picture in my head of a fat Dom DeLuise. I'm so sorry.
Definitely not, though. All right, so I think that does it for us. Oh my gosh, we're only slightly over the episode time for the episode itself, so
we're just a bunch of jabberjaws.
Yeah, but I think that'll call it for today. Anything you want to plug, anything you want to mention before we close out here?
Your butt. I'm kidding. I'm sorry. No, you can find me on social media on Twitter at ACHOHELELWHY, which is the phonetic spelling of Holly, because I decided to make things difficult for myself 10 years ago.
And if you are looking for me, you can catch my reviews on hauntedmtl.com. You can find me on Twitter, just social media in general is at HPComic. That is HPKOMIC. Other than that, I think that does it for us this week. We will catch you Monday next week with our episode on Chucky Season 2, Episode 3, Hail Mary.
That's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for that one.
All right. Say Alrighty. Goodbye, Holly.
Goodbye, Holly.
Goodbye. You were just listening to Kids' Stuff, a Chucky podcast, a Haunted MTL original podcast. This podcast is produced, edited, and co-hosted by David Davis. You can find his articles at hauntedmtl.com or visit him on Twitter as at HPComic. That is HPKOMIC. The podcast co-host is Holly Han. You can find her on Twitter at ACHOHELELWHY. Find previous episodes of this podcast or discover new podcasts, horror reviews, and news at hauntedmtl.com.